My name is Mike Rowe, and this is my job.
I explore the country looking for people who aren't afraid to get dirty.
So basically, it's me and you in a toilet against 300,000 poo-eating fish.
Hard-working men and women who earn an honest living.
What about all the way back there?
Isn't it?
No.
Doing the kinds of jobs that make civilized life possible for the rest of us.
Now, get ready to get dirty.
Coming up on Dirty Jobs, David Metters leaves a lasting impression by making faces.
How long have you been putting faces on pottery?
25 years.
He gives me some time behind the wheel, the throwing wheel.
Ah!
No. And I face the fact that making clay pottery only looks easy.
It's perfect.
And later, I go for an indoor tanning session with the skin getting tanned.
These are deer?
Yes.
Isn't mine. I'll be tanning hides in upstate New York.
Anything that rots will usually make chemicals that can help tan a skin.
I'll be de-hairing.
God, hair soup.
De-fleshing. And thoroughly disgusting.
Ah.
Tanners used to use dung, urine, and brains to preserve animal skins. Today, the technology is a little newer. You smell?
Ah.
Still bad.
Do you smell it?
What? Smell what?
Oh, God. Today I've come to the backwoods of northern Georgia to investigate the lost art of jug making. Apparently, the soil in this part of the country is ideal to the task at hand. And there's a rumor that a local artist has taken jug making to a whole new level. Yes, it's face jugs. Want to know more? Me too.
No one knows who first put a face on a piece of pottery, but members of the Metters family have been doing it for generations.
Howdy.
Hello.
You David?
Well, I could be.
I'm Mike.
I'm David.
Nice jugs.
Thank you, sir.
Did you do this?
Yep.
How long have you been putting faces on pottery?
About 25 years.
Well, that explains why you're so good at it. What do you call this one?
That's a politician jug.
Two faces.
Right.
Are you an artist?
I don't think so.
No?
No.
Because we were talking to people in town, and they say that David Metters is an artist that lives up in the hills that does all sorts of interesting things with pottery and clay. So you should know that people think you're an artist, if nothing else.
Well, it's a way of making a living, I guess.
What do you call this one?
That's a single-face jug.
The eyes are made out of what?
A real white firing clay.
And the teeth are made out of the same?
No, not those.
What are these made from?
Well, they're my teeth.
Your own individual human teeth?
Sure.
You do. Oh, geez. Okay. Now, so you're really putting yourself into your work?
You could say that.
This land has been in the Metters family since 1840. They've been making pottery since 1892. And except for the addition of electricity, the process hasn't really changed all that much. After the clay is collected from the Metters family property, it's dried on a wood stove. Then it's pulverized in a crusher. Add some water, mix it up, and you're ready to make some pottery.
So this is where it all happens. The actual work.
Yeah, this is where we do the turning it.
This is what would have just come out of that mill
right
when it was completely done.
You need to make it into a ball. Show you the process a little bit.
I can do that, I think.
The rounder it is when you start, the easier it is to center.
Probably never seen it done this way before, have you?
Nope, I haven't. Probably never will again, either.
No, probably not.
Throw that ball on there. As close to the center as you can get it. Oh, no. It won't stick like that.
You mean throw it on with?
Put some force behind it. You need to turn the wheel on.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely not centered, is it? Oh, look at you. There you go. Bad jug. Show it who's boss. Oh. The heck was that?
Can't use that language on TV.
What are you doing now?
Getting ready to pull it up. Knuckle, finger. So this right here is about the hardest piece there is to make.
Well, I'm glad we started with something so reasonable.
Have fun.
All right, I'm gonna put my fingers on the inside, my knuckle on the outside.
And put some pressure. And start pulling up.
Whoa. It's perfect. Well, hold on a sec here. I should have paid better attention. Knuckle. Well, that's a disaster. Let's slow this thing down a little bit. What should I do with this?
Throw it on the corner of the table over there. Right there. Most people, when they start, they make bowls.
It's a lot more physical than you let on. I mean, this is work.
That looks pretty good.
We're still okay.
Yep.
Small bowl. Small bowl. Tiny little cereal bowl. Little saucer, maybe.
Yeah.
Tell you, make one little mistake. It's very unforgiving.
Very.
No, 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 no. Dave Barsky, king of positive reinforcement. The director starts laughing at you. You know you've hit a new low.
Start pulling toward the center a little bit.
We've been doing it 25 years, right?
Yeah, pretty close.
All right, well, this looks like a vase.
That looks like a vase.
That's something I can put a face on?
That's something you can put a face on.
All right, let's do it. Hey, look at my
face.
Well,
I'll tell you what I did. I made you a jug earlier today.
You did?
Yeah, for you to put a face on.
See, my face doesn't fit on that. We need a maxi jug.
Coming up, it's my turn for some FaceTime with a jug.
Your side looks inquisitive and intelligent. Mine looks angry and world-weary and beaten.
Is that a reflection in the interview?
Then, where there are jugs, there's fire. Where there's fire, there's an oven.
How do you get them out?
You crawl through that little hole right there.
Where there's an oven, there's a small, dirty place for me to squeeze into. And later, what do you need to make an animal hide water resistant? Water.
That's why we usually tuck our pants inside our boots.
That would have been a key tip early on.
I'm going to put a handle on it first.
What the heck are you making exactly? Right. That's a very generous proboscis you have there.
The bigger the nose, the better people like them for some reason.
Well, a big nose speaks of character, you know. Oh, that's the nostril. Can I make the other one?
Sure.
It's rare that I get a chance to pick a nose that doesn't already exist. It looks a little broken like mine. I'm deviated.
Certainly. Make me an eye. Well, I figured, you know, you do one side and I'll do the other.
As an astigmatism.
Eyelids.
Eyelids, of course. Doesn't really look the same as the other one at all. Your side looks inquisitive and intelligent. Mine looks angry and world-weary and beaten.
Is that a reflection of the interview?
I'll let you determine that by the close of business today.
it's an ear with character, all right? He's in a barroom brawl. Took a left hook in his ear years ago.
Upper lip.
Make it stiff. This is a jug that you would store poison in, or maybe something radioactive. We're going to make some teeth now.
We're going to make some teeth.
This used to be, what, just a saucer?
Plate.
Here, let's give him a little baby tooth over here. Look at that. Look at those rich, pouting lips. That's nice. Just what we need, a jug with an expressive mouth.
One more little thing. He needs to be able to see. You know, he's got a blank expression on his face.
I want to give him an eye that makes it so that when he says, hey, hand me that, five different people bend over at the same time. Yeah, like that. The jug I just did, that's got to dry.
Right.
And that takes days.
Right. 10 days to 2 weeks.
But after it's dried, they'd be in this condition right now, and that means they're ready for glazing.
Right.
Putting it simply, pottery glaze is a mixture of various minerals, clay, and water.
Am I doing it right?
Yeah. Good enough.
And that's completely coated on the inside, you reckon?
Right. Turn him upside down.
Glazing not only adds color and a smooth surface, it also seals the inside of the pottery, so when it's fired, it can hold liquids.
All right, so we're done?
Done with that.
Now what do we do?
We go to the furnace.
This would be the kiln.
Yeah.
When'd you build this?
About 88.
1888, was it?
Oh, 1988.
Okay. The whole process then, now this has been glazed, so now they would go in here, and how long would they cook for?
It takes anywhere from 12 to 14 hours.
Last night, David fired a bunch of pottery.
You start with a fire real slow and just keep building on it. It takes about 6 hours to get it red hot. And then after red hot, you can start putting a little more wood in it a little more often.
At what temperatures do you fire to?
Somewhere between 2380 and 2410.
That's a hot fire.
Yeah, I would say so. It takes about a day for this thing to cool down before you can go in it.
How many you got in there?
Somewhere between 40 and maybe 50.
How do you get them out?
You crawl through that little hole right there.
Shocker. Hey, you made a pig.
Yeah.
I didn't know you made a pig.
Look at that.
David fires thousands of pieces a year. That's a lot of time in the kiln.
I think that's it.
Okay.
May I come out of the oven now?
Let me move some of this stuff so you can get out.
I'd like to tell you it's the first time I've been in an oven, but if you've seen the show before, you know it's another oven. Ooh. Appreciate you having us over.
Pleasure. Anytime.
How much for the pig?
More than a dollar, less than a million.
I'm going to leave something between a dollar and a million down at the front place.
You take care.
I will, thank you. Can't leave without taking a pig.
Stick around. The best is yet to come. And by best, I mean dirtiest. At the tannery. How do you know you're in for a long, dirty day?
I've been here less than a minute, and you've given me two pair of gloves and an apron.
And later...
That's a bad load.
That's liquid hair.
Every day at a tannery is a bad hair day. But there's another way to look at it.
You know, if you ever go to a beauty parlor where they're getting their hair straightened, it's essentially the same thing.
You hear that, ladies? The tannery, it's like a beauty parlor. Pulled this off the website just last week from a viewer named Omer Perlman. He writes, hey, Mike, a couple years ago I had a summer job in upstate New York. It was at a tannery where they made leather products the old-fashioned way. That was the summer I learned that old-fashioned was really just another word for dirty. So check out Meyer & Sons Tannery. Ask for Carl. And if you do, tell him Omer said howdy. P.S. If you do this, make sure you do it on an empty stomach. Too late for that, Omer. already had breakfast, but we are definitely here, and I'm going in.
People have been tanning hides since the dawn of civilization. In the ancient world, items as diverse as shoes, boats, and body armor all utilized leather in one form or another. But in spite of their importance, tanneries were relegated to the outskirts of town. And after one whiff on the inside, I knew why.
Oh, man. Who's Carl?
Me.
Mike.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
Jesse.
Pleasure.
Nice to meet you.
These are deer?
Yes.
And this is a tannery?
Last we checked.
It's time to fire the maid. All right, what can you show me today? What are we going to do and what's going to happen? Of course.
Today we're going to start by putting the raw deer into the drum.
Did you call them raw deer?
Yeah, raw.
Raw. What is it that you actually make here?
Out of the deerskin, we make a soft suede padding leather. Goes into piano moving parts.
So when you hit the key on the outside, the inside of the piano hits the striker thing?
Not quite the striker. That's a felt covered, but the thing that hits the striker is covered with buckskin.
But it's part of the piano action, which is the mechanism inside the piano between when you hit the key and the hammer strikes the string. In the industry, they call them butts and catchers.
You make butts?
We make butts.
Jesse is one of Carl Meyer's five sons. First step, empty the drum of any remaining water.
All right.
Yeah.
Of course. I could have seen that coming. What am I smelling?
The rotten egg smell?
Yeah, that's it. It's a melange of things, not just dead, rotting flesh. The reason it's going through this process is this flesh and the hair and the blood, that's all got to come out of this.
Right. And one of the big interfering factors is fat.
Right.
That'll keep the chemicals in the later stages from getting in there, so you have to get rid of that.
How dramatically has the whole process of tanning changed over the years?
Anything that rots will usually make chemicals that can help tan a skin.
In the old days, one of the stages was dog dung.
You use dog poo to tan?
In the Middle Ages, they would use anything, you know, waste product, and as soon as it would start to ferment, it would create chemicals that would help to tan a skin.
How did the hair get on the inside? Oh, it's from the one that was lying.
Yeah.
Of course. Thought we might have stumbled across a brand new species of deer. Fur on the inside. You hardly ever see that anywhere except upstate New York. So the de-hairing process then typically takes how long?
Altogether, probably the hair will be soup in about an hour and a half.
All right.
You know, soak for 45 minutes and then the de-hairing for about 45 minutes.
And that's step one?
That's step one.
And step two, then, is unloading it.
Right. Step two is after the hair is completely dissolved and the skin is swelled, it needs to come out and then be fleshed. And that's what's in this drum over here.
Over here, the same thing has been happening only for, like what, overnight? For a while?
Overnight.
Let's look at that. I've been here less than a minute and, you've given me two pair of gloves and an apron. Stuck to the apron, then, are various bits of various animals.
Various tannages, colors.
Yeah.
Body parts. Turn it off.
This looks like a really bad carnival ride. See what's behind door number one. God, that's a bad load.
That's liquid hair.
Liquid hair. Ball. Do you smell it?
What? Smell what? This is called a wash door.
Oh, I see where we're going with this. Oh.
Cold water?
How much?
All the way.
Dreadful smell. Is it the sulfur? Is it the rotting flesh? Is it the hair?
Hydrogen sulfide is the main thing that smells like rotten eggs. But, you know, if you ever go to a beauty parlor where they're getting their hair straightened, it's essentially the same thing.
You hear that, ladies? The tannery, it's like a beauty parlor.
Except cheaper.
Oh.
Think of a big washing machine, except instead of clothes, it's flesh. And instead of lint, it's hair.
Hair soup.
Pull them out. One.
This is the flesh side of the animal.
All right,
it's got all the fat on it.
This is the outside of the deer here. That's the outside.
That's where the hair was.
Yes.
All right, so we've got the hair off.
Right.
But it's this side now that's obviously the problem.
Yes.
Right. That's what the fleshing machine is for, is it will take, ideally, it will take all that off.
That is slicker than snot there.
That's why we usually tuck our pants inside our boots.
That would have been a key tip early on.
This comes in handy.
Nice.
This method of tanning is called chrome tanning. Chrome tanning uses the preservative chromium sulfate. It's a kind of salt, and the process can be completed in just a few hours. Chrome tanned leather is among the softest and most pliable leathers. It's favored for gloves and clothing.
Oh, sorry, Troy. So this is just pure fat, connective tissue?
Yep, a little bit of meat in there.
Yeah, it certainly does explain a lot of the odor.
Coming up, the deflesher wasn't designed to be a deadly hazard, and yet...
Is there even one single machine in this whole place that can't kill you?
Can't kill you? Probably not.
And later, the tanning process looks and smells awful, but there is an upside.
It's good for your hands. You know, it's like hand cream.
Oh, it does feel buttery, smooth, and soft, almost like the inside of a dead cow. Oh, the deflesher?
Yes, the fleshing machine.
The fleshing machine. She's a beaut. All right, how's it work?
I mean, this is the kind of thing that they used to do. They would put the skin over like a rounded half barrel.
Yeah.
And take a big, long band knife, they called it, and would basically push the flesh off the skin this way. But this machine does it much, much faster.
This is high-tech, is what we have here.
Well, high-tech, right, relatively speaking, yes.
High-tech indeed, and maybe even a little sinister. Inside is a corrugated roller with little tiny teeth. Those teeth pull the skin past a blade spinning at high speed, stripping away the residual fat and muscle.
And if we don't let go of the skin, well, then...
Yeah, then
we'd get sucked into the machine.
Exactly.
And we'd be defleshed.
We would.
That's the neck down there, right?
You can actually tell what the neck is because you see all those little blue spots there?
Yeah.
Those are actually scars from bugs. And right around the neck is the one place that they can't reach, like ticks.
Like ticks that have been sucking their blood out and they can't reach them behind their neck.
Yep.
That's kind of dreadful.
All right, cross your fingers.
Translucent.
Think of it like you were throwing a pizza pie.
It's the kind of pizza pie you send back. That wasn't good, was it?
Well, it's a start. Fleshing machine one, Mike, zero.
Typically, I take care of the jokes in this
format.
Sorry. Ah. It looks perfect.
Can you get good leather out of network executives?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's overly tanned and surprisingly soft. One single machine in this whole place that can't kill you?
Can't kill you? Probably not.
To keep the hides from rotting, the next step is to tan them. The tanning process alters skins irreversibly and makes them resistant to cold moisture. When the they come out, they look like this. If you've been following along closely, you'll notice that we pulled a switcheroo. Tanning deer hides does not turn them into cow hides. Just for the record, sorry for any confusion.
What you have spent all this time doing is getting the flesh off, the fat out of the skin.
Yeah.
Now, after the tannage, you got to put the fat back in.
Why not just keep the grease and the leather in the first place?
Because the grease will react with the tannin and keep the fiber proteins from being tanned.
The grease actually doesn't smell all that bad.
It's, really?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what it's doing on this show.
You know, like there, that's a little fat. That'll be not well tanned when it gets further on in the process.
I see.
Because the fat blocks chemicals from getting through.
This was my skin. I feel personally responsible for this little bit of fat.
Good.
There. Well, I feel better.
Man, good shot.
Whether it's cow hides or deer hides, the finishing process is the same, which means that all 200 of these tanned skins need to go into the drum. As part of the finishing process, the water in the drum contains a proprietary tannin formula, along with a chemical to neutralize tannic acids.
All right, so we got 200 hides in the drum. They're going to spin around for how long?
Hour and a half.
And what's going to happen to them in there again while they're spinning?
Well, we put a little bit of dye in, and then we put fat liquor in, which is grease and ester.
Fat liquor?
Fat liquor.
Like it sounds?
Like liqueur? Like a...
Yeah, kind of.
Fat liquor.
All right, that's a new one. That's a good one.
First, we're going to add the dye, then the fat liquor.
This is rocket science.
It sure seems that way, without the rocket.
The lubricant in most fat liquors is lanolin, a waxy grease extracted from wool during textile processing. Fat liquor also contains preservative alcohols. So, in a way, it contains both fat and liquor. Hence the name.
How much you need?
18 pounds.
18 pounds. And again, its basic purpose?
Just like oil in a car. Lubricate the fibers.
This is the reason why, when you're bowling, your shoes don't grab and you fly face first.
Yes.
It gives the leather a little bit of...
Right.
The hides stayed hidden in the drum for 90 minutes as the dye and lube did their work. Then they were ready to be unloaded. And I learned that cowhide isn't the only skin that can benefit from fat liquor.
It's good for your hands. You know, it's like hand cream.
Oh, it does feel buttery, smooth, and soft. Almost like the inside of a dead cow. These are soaking wet and kind of slippery. Talk to me about what's happened.
Okay. These are fat liquor and dyed. Put them on a horse. Have to squeeze the water out.
You have a water squeezer outer?
Yes.
After spinning in the fat liquor and dye, these 200 cow hides are now soft, supple, and water resistant.
13. You know, it's tempting to do some TV trickery right now and make you think that we actually unloaded all 200 of these, but it's just not going to happen.
Get back in there.
Coming up.
It's dirty. It's dangerous. It's downright deadly. It's the staker.
The staker's purpose is to soften tanned hides.
I mean, who conceives of such a thing?
Risk of serious bodily injury is just a bonus.
There we go.
I think it's going rather well.
And later, one more dangerous machine, one more bizarre byproduct.
This isn't dust. It's powdered flesh.
Before I came to Meyer & Sons Tannery, I'd been in lots of foul-smelling places. But never before had I breathed the scent of liquefied hair, putrefied flesh and fat, and chemicals that smelled like rotten eggs all in one day. The most odoriferous tasks appeared to be done, and the hides were finally tanned, lubed, and dyed. But they were still a long way from being ready to sell. Hides need to be wrung out before being hung to dry. The wringer is a lot like the defleshing machine in that it has big rollers that you'll want to keep your hands away from. Unlike the deflesher, if your hands do get caught in it, they'll be crushed rather than stripped of fat and muscle. Just so you know. Next stop for the hides, second floor. To get them there, the tannery has an elevator.
We're at a tenth of a mile an hour right now, I suppose. Going straight up to the second floor of a tannery. I didn't even know they had two floors.
The elevator is about as fast as the tannery itself is clean. It was taking me to see Matt, another of Carl Meyer's five sons.
Hi.
The second floor.
Welcome to the second floor.
You're Matt.
Yep.
Okay.
Nice to meet you, Mike.
I have some wet skins for you.
Yep. You can let these go because actually we have some dry ones to take down first before we'll have room to hang these up. So the dry room is over this way.
This is a drying room.
Yes.
All right.
The wet skins are dried here in the drying room.
You could call it the death room because I'm pretty sure you could come to a premature end on those things.
Kept between 100 and 110 degrees, the room has ceiling fans to circulate hot air and exhaust fans to remove moist air. When the skins are dry, they're stiff like boards. First, we need to wrangle them before we can hang the wet ones.
So we take the dry skins.
Yeah.
And we have to make them soft again. And that's where this machine comes in.
My God, what the heck do you call it? Looks like some sort of spinning wheel straight out of hell.
This is the staking machine.
Staking?
Kind of a disappointing name because it doesn't correspond at all with what it looks like. But before they had a fancy new 100-year-old contraption like this, they used to drive a wedge of wood into the ground. Then you'd take the leather like this. And you'd work it back and forth, and you see how soft it gets right there.
Yeah.
So you're breaking up the fibers of the skin and getting them to start moving again.
Making it supple.
Yep.
All right. Just so I can say, I used a tool 500 years old. Okay, that's enough. Yeah, that's I mean, really, this is what they did all day?
So they came up with this. Keep your hands on the wood, and you'll be fine. Get your hands in here, and you may go home with a few less fingers.
Man, who conceives of such a thing? Good. This is like some nightmare out of some crazy old mill.
And it's the most fun machine to use here, so.
Fun?
Yeah.
Let's have some fun.
You hold the skin with your thigh for right here.
Uh-huh.
Your hands just guide it. Any questions?
Oh, I have lots of questions. You are this far from steel biting jaws.
We like to live on the edge. But doesn't it look like fun?
No, it doesn't look like fun, Matt. And I'm not entirely sure what went wrong in your childhood to make you think this would be. Diane?
Getting the rhythm? Happens to everybody their first time.
Right. Didn't have enough thigh in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was protecting now you know.
The dickies.
The staker was patented back in 1881. Hasn't changed much since. This one was manufactured in the early 20th century, and the Meyer family bought it used about 30 years ago. As you might have guessed, it's not a big market for these things.
I don't like this machine.
I think it's going rather well.
There are two things I'd like to share with you. Both come from the bottom of my heart. The first is, you're very good at what you do. And the second is, I don't like this machine at all. And I would like very much to go somewhere else now in your fabulous facility.
It's not one of your favorites?
No.
Maybe you'll like the next machine better.
What's it called? The killer? The mangler? The spindler?
The disemboweler?
Great. Take me to the disemboweler.
First, I'll shut this one off.
Shut it off. Throw it out the window. Drench it in kerosene and catch it on fire. What difference does it make? Thing's a freaking killer.
After the staker has had its way with the hides, and me for that matter, I take on the buffing machine. A sandpaper roll removes any remaining bits of flesh and works down the veins and wrinkles left in the skin.
Yeah, this isn't dust. This is powdered flesh.
And what you get is the nice suede without any of the veins or flesh left on it.
Coming up.
This is a measuring machine?
Yeah.
This is pre-metric. This is pre-Roman numeral.
How to measure the square footage of a hide that isn't square.
How many square feet would you reckon I am?
10-1.
10-1?
Yeah.
What do you think you could get for me on the hide market?
And later.
This is the stuff that was on the back of the deer hide?
Yeah, that's the flesh and fat.
My God.
If you thought the front end of the deflesher was bad, where do you see the back?
I've seen a lot of wheelbarrows full of a lot of stuff. This one wins. Well, 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 look who it is. The old man at the measuring machine. Look, it's the family's together again.
Still got all your fingers?
So everything's working. Yeah. Another one. This is a measuring machine?
Yeah, measures square foot.
How the heck does that happen?
Well, you feed a skin through or whatever you want to feed through, irregular shape. When it goes through, it raises each one of these wheels depending upon the shape of the skin that goes through.
Each one of those little clicks is a measurement?
Yep.
This is pre-metric. This is pre-Roman numeral.
We're basically going to calculate the square footage of an object that has no defined shape.
It's an irregular shape. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
What's Matt going to do?
Somebody's got to be here to catch it.
Right.
All right. You're like the catcher in the rye. The catcher in the sty.
Unused side up.
Uh-huh.
Slides through. You try and make sure that the wrinkles stay out. And it's now 8 1/4 feet. 8-1.
Wait a minute, you mean if we took that and we put it through, like, on another angle, it would still come up to the same?
Should.
Look at that. 8-1. There must be lasers that do this now.
A lot of times they will use a machine like this to make sure that those machines are working correctly.
Amazing.
9-1.
9-1, he says, because that says 9-1.
And
what do you write, 9-1?
Right there in the corner.
Right up there in the corner. 8-3? 8-4?
That's good. 8-3 is good.
All right. It's like you're actually seeing a mechanical calculation happen in front of you. Maybe I'm just delirious with fatigue and overly impressed, but it's kind of cool.
Easily impressed.
Yeah. How many square feet would you reckon I am?
About 10, 10, 1, 10, 10
1?
Yeah.
What do you think you could get for me on the hide market? In the end, I mean, what are you making?
Okay, this is what it's all about.
An upright grand piano and a bowling shoe.
Yep. It's for a right-handed woman.
You mean the sole of the left foot is different than the sole on the right foot?
Yes. This is what the right shoe looks like.
Oh.
And this is reinforced with hard leather because it drags.
The bottoms of professional bowling shoes are different depending on whether you're right or left-handed.
Yep.
Who the heck knew that? And the piano?
Here's a piece out of another piano that fell apart. This part here is the butt catcher. This little piece on the side there is the back check.
You're telling me that everything I did today with a deer skin comes down to that little piece of rectangular something right there?
Yep.
And this little guy here? That's kind of incredible.
Well,
you know what? It inspires me. Would you like to hear something here? Hold this. Now, everyone who's got a job has got his dues to pay. Working for that paycheck and getting through the day. But if you're bored or otherwise inclined to be a slob,
club, grab some boots, lose that suit, and get a dirty job.
Nice. Got one more dirty job.
Of course you do.
Your last dirty job.
My God.
Ah, this is the stuff that was on the back of the deer hide?
Yeah, that's the flesh and the fat.
This is a pile of gelatinous deer. I can't quite get my head around it. It's as bad gets, I would think.
Okay, fill her up. Oh.
God. I swear to God, that wasn't me.
Well, there's something you don't see every day. Fat from 70 deers. Quivering in a wheelbarrow.
Why couldn't we have ended with the song? It was a good song.
I don't think I've ever seen anything quite this bad. Had enough? No, you haven't. You're still looking, aren't you? Huh. Deer tails have roots.
Who knew? Seen a lot of wheelbarrows full of a lot of stuff. This one wins.
It is very difficult to know what to say to you guys at a time like this. Jesse, you're filthy.
Thank you.
Matt, you disgust me. Carl, absolutely nauseating and sickening. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do you know where the dumpster is?
Yep. Open the front door to the right.
I don't need to know. I just want to make sure you know where you're going. Goodbye, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Bye, Mike. Feel free to come back in.
Yeah. I'll see you next Thursday.
If you don't go to discovery.com/dirty jobs right now and suggest my next dirty job, you'll leave me no choice but to resort to mass advertising. Look, I'll do it. I'll take out a big old giant ad and I'll beg you for dirty jobs, but the fact is I really can't afford to do that. I will if I have to, but I can't afford it. You know what I'm saying? Discovery.com/dirty jobs. What's that right there? That's a tick. Look at that, you got a deer tick right on it, right there.
I was waiting for you to do something like, you know.
No.
I was afraid to look.
And Kurt? I only have one question left. Do you know where the dumpster is?
Out the front door.
Just as long as you know.
Take a right. Okay.
No. You go out the front door.
His name's not Kurt, though.
I've been called Kurt before.